Welcome to the NBA Front Office Show. I'm your host, Keith Smith, and we are part of the Almighty Baller Podcast and Radio Network. Joining me, as always, is my buddy Pete Toll. We are back at it after a little bit of time off. I can tell you what was going on in my life. We were enjoying a little bit of family time before school starts. For those of you unfamiliar, here in Central Florida, we start school about mid-August, so we were enjoying those last little bit, fleeting bits of summer with my family. We had some family in town, so that's why we took a little bit of time off in between shows. And as I said, with me, as usual, to do another round of off-season previews is Pete Toll. Pete, I know you can't get into super deep detail, but I know you're working on a project related to basketball over the last couple weeks. How's that going in general terms?
It's been a lot of stress, a lot of research, but I think once it's actually revealed, to the world, basketball fanatics will be pretty happy with the results. That's all I can say.
Yeah, well, let's not get you in trouble. We'll leave it at that. So what we're going to do today, now that we're back at it, we're going to continue with our off-season review series. If you are listening for the first time, what we do is we go in-depth on each NBA team. We're going to get into the Chicago Bulls and Cleveland Cavaliers in this episode. What we do is we go through every guy who left, every guy who's come in. We talk about all of them. Then we ask kind of a couple big questions related to the teams, talk a little bit about what kind of cap space they have left, what they might still need or still need to do, and then if they're kind of stock up or stock down as we approach this new season. And this is really just kind of compared to last year. So as I said, we're going to do the Chicago Bulls and the Cleveland Cavaliers. So we'll get right into it with the Chicago Bulls to kick us off. And let's talk about the big name who's headed out, traded at the NBA draft. Jimmy Butler traded to the Minnesota Timberwolves. So Pete, obviously Butler's an all-star talent. He has really grown from the late first round draft pick, 30th overall, right? And yep. Grew into not only an all-star, but an all-NBA player, one of the NBA's true good all-around superstar players. And there was a lot of rumors last year that the Bulls were going to move Butler. It started last year at the draft and then kind of continued all season long. And there were all these questions, he doesn't really get along with Dwayne Wade. And then he doesn't get along with Rajon Rondo. And then Butler was like, we're all good. We're fine. And the Bulls, made the playoffs last year, snuck into that last spot in the eighth seed. And then it turned into at the draft, leading up to the draft, the rumors just didn't go away. And then Butler's former coach, Tom Thibodeau, made the big swing and went out and acquired Jimmy Butler to bring him into Minnesota. So what I want to ask you is, what is it exactly that the Bulls are losing with Jimmy Butler headed out of town?
In my opinion, one of the best two-way players. He's right behind Kawhi Leonard for me in the NBA. So you obviously cannot replace that easily if you're the Chicago Bulls. And what's funny to me is, if I remember correctly, and Keith, you know this more than I do, but didn't they have the same deal in the prior draft when Chris Dunn was rumored to have been drafted? I think the pick was up in the air, and then LaVine was on the table. The same kind of structured deal for Jimmy Butler, possibly, when that rumor was kind of going down.
Yeah, that was definitely out there. And I know it was also out there that they were potentially looking at the Bulls were looking at the Celtics drafting Chris Dunn and then doing a swap at that time. So the Bulls have obviously had their eyes on Chris Dunn for the better part of a year plus now. And then it didn't go anywhere, right? It is ultimately there. But yeah, I think you're right. Now we're sitting here a year later and the rumored deal at the time ended up being what actually happened.
Yeah, and it's funny with Butler, because everybody kind of went crazy, like, well, that's all you got for Jimmy Butler. And yes, in my opinion, just as well as everybody else, it was not a good trade for the Bulls. I think they could have got a little bit more. But what Butler brings, ultimately, the ultimate answer is you're not going to be able to replace any of that with what they've got in return, which we're going to talk about.
Yeah, that's the tough thing, and like we said, we go through the guys who are out first and we'll get into it. So plenty to come on Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine and those kind of things. So we will definitely get into that. as we get deeper into the show. But let's move on to the next guy on the list. We generally kind of go by big names or alphabetical order, so we're going to step out of alphabetical order. We're going to go to the next guy on the list, Rajon Rondo. So he was brought in on what was functionally a 1-year deal with the Bulls. His second year, which would have been this season, the 17-18 season, was partially guaranteed for $3 million. The Bulls, after Butler was traded and not really doing much else in the free agent market, I think realized, all right, let's move on from Rondo as well. Despite Rondo playing well down the stretch and then in the playoffs before he got injured, but they ate that $3 million. Rondo subsequently signed with the New Orleans Pelicans. So Rondo out of the picture, that's one of, I don't know, what, 30 point guards on this roster somehow? The 30, well, you're only allowed to have 20, and yet somehow the Bulls have 30, it feels like. But it's, Rondo's out of the picture now. So what are your feelings about Rondo? I know we're not on the Pelicans, but do you think Rondo can still be a productive starting point guard in the NBA at this point?
That's a good question. He did well at the beginning of the season for the Bulls, and then the mind games kind of happened back and forth. Obviously he has kind of a loose cannon type personality. Him and Fred Hoiberg clashed, and then he was in and out of the lineup. I would say based on the fit where he is with the Pelicans, that's his last shot. Yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that. That's his last shot.
Yeah, and like I said, we're not on the Pelicans show yet. We will get there, I promise. But it really is with them, it is that they're going to start him, as the reports. He's going to start at point guard with Jrue Holiday sliding over to the two, which is not really new for the Pelicans. They did that quite a bit over the last couple of seasons due to the myriad of injuries that they've had. But it'll be interesting to see for me. If he can't get it done now, then I'm not sure where Rondo is at, and I don't know that he has the temperament to be a backup. I think if
No.
it turns yeah right, I think if it turns into Rondo's going to be a backup, I think then it becomes time for Rondo to move on and move out and become a coach, which seems like a direction he's kind of interested in going. So that's the story on Rondo. Now the rest of these guys, we're gonna kind of just knock them out in alphabetical order because they all are roughly the same in my opinion. Isaiah Cannon, he or Cannon, I guess, he was waived 200K cap hit for him. He hasn't caught on anywhere as of yet. He is really at this point, he's just kind of a third combo-ish guard. I know you have a lot of feelings on Cannon from his time with the 76ers, who are your team. So give us a little bit of your thoughts on Cannon and what his future might be in the league.
He can shoot from three, but he's undersized. He cannot run the point guard spot. So he's more of a very undersized shooting guard. He doesn't defend very well. So he's kind of in that, and I don't really want to compare him and Jimmer Fredette, but it's kind of off the top of my head, it's only the really comparison that I can think of as far as a really above average 3-point shooting and nothing else, because Cannon can't handle the ball well, he doesn't facilitate very well. I could see Cannon possibly getting like a very end of the bench deal with like Minnesota or something like that, but it's going to be hard. He's going to be one that I could see very easily. Like the flurry of deals that have happened over the last 2 weeks, lots of guys signing in China. I can see that happen.
If he went overseas, I think he'd have a huge year overseas. I think in the NBA, he's your third guard, which is really what he was with Chicago, and then they third point guard, I should say, not your third guard, because he's not that good to be that kind of combo guy first off the bench.
No.
But then he played well in the playoffs when Rondo went down, which is funny because he's really a streak shooter. So when he gets in there, he will really start. All of a sudden it's like, man, Cannon's a player. You're like, what's going on here? And then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, Cannon, he can't play. So that's kind of where it's at with him. So we'll see, what happens. Ultimately where it goes from there. with him. So we're gonna move on to the next guy. This guy certainly has point guard size. Doesn't really have a lot of point guard ability anymore, and that's Michael Carter-Williams. So Carter-Williams, another one of those, you know, infinite Bulls point guards. He is now headed off to the Charlotte Hornets, as we covered in the Hornets in one of our recent episodes before our little break. We both, I think, Carter-Williams will be okay for Charlotte, but in Chicago, mm-hmm. where there was no shooting around him, he was awful. Because he can't shoot at all, and he needs space. He needs, you know, the floor opened up for him to make plays. You know, so I think it was the right move by the Bulls to let him go, as well as I think it was the right move on Carter Williams to move on. You have any thoughts on that?
Just that I think that he'll be a good defender for with his size, you know, against guards, you know, in small backup minutes, you know, for the Hornets. But, yeah, that's about it on Carter Williams.
Yeah, there's just not much to be said, right? There. So then we'll move on to Joffrey LeVern. He was a restricted free agent. The Bulls ultimately, I believe, pulled his qualifying offer. I know that they did. Then they let him go. He signed with the San Antonio Spurs, 2-year minimum deal in San Antonio, which probably automatically means Joffrey LeVern will be awesome, and we'll all be talking about him as a $10 million guy this time next summer when he opts out of that second year and becomes a free agent, just because that's what happens when the Spurs acquire bigs. So, but with the Bulls, he wasn't part of anything there. They didn't need him. He wasn't, you know, going to do anything for them. So, you know, so we're going to move on to two guys who they have not left yet, but they're pending free agents still. So let's talk the kind of simpler situation first. Anthony Morrow, veteran guy, still a good shooter, can still, you know, make shots off the bench. He's not going to return to Chicago because, as we're about to get into when we get into what they might look like this year, he's going to want to play for a better team. But ultimately, Morrow is a guy who's still out there in the free agent market. I think he may be a guy when we get into camp or we get into the beginning part of the season, he may still be a free agent and then catch on with somebody after.
I agree.
The line. Yeah, I just think he's a guy, he's going to be a little more choosy about his spot, and we'll wait till a team's like, hey, we need a shooter, go get him. So you already said you agree on that one. So let's move on to the more interesting one. Nikola Mirotic, still a restricted free agent with the Bulls. He's just kind of been hanging out there. He is sitting on the Bulls cap sheet right now with a almost $11 million cap hold, $10.9 million. The Bulls are, you know, without getting too deep into what we'll talk about in a few minutes, they're still operating as an over-the-cap team, so that's not really impacting anything with Mirotic sitting there with that $11 million cap hold. But what he is, he obviously is not, the Bulls have not come with an offer that he's happy with. Cap space is dried up around the league, so no other team's going to come with an offer that the Bulls wouldn't immediately match. The most cap space sitting available right now is, Phoenix has about $12 million, and Philadelphia has about $12 million. But Phoenix, they're not going to sign Mirotic with the plethora of forwards that they have, and Philadelphia is saving that cap space to really do something towards renegotiating and extending Robert Covington is the assumption there. So we'll be curious to see where that one goes. So there's no suitors left to sign Mirotic, because then then you're into teams with $7 million, $4 million, and the Bulls would immediately match that. So there's no sense on him signing one of those deals. So what I'm going to do here, Pete, is I'm going to ask you, does he get some sort of long-term, and by long-term I mean a 2 or 3 year deal with Chicago, or do you think he ultimately just says, forget it, I'll sign the qualifying offer and be an unrestricted free agent in the summer of 2018?
I think they go qualifying offer, and I think that's actually what's, in my mind, what Chicago's kind of trying to force, because they did come out and say they wanted to keep small deals. And then if you look at the season that Mirotic had last season, very down year, he shot 41% field goal percentage, and then his, you know, bread and butter is the 3-point line, and he only shot 34%. And he does not defend in the post or on the perimeter. So that's a lot to kind of gamble with if you're Chicago and you're trying to go the route that they're going in a you know, rebuild sense, and then look at, you know, smaller deals. I just don't know that they're convinced that Mirotic can give them really what they're looking for. And then they got Lauri Markkanen as well. So it's kind of like the same player, you know, in my mind.
Yeah, it is interesting, and we're definitely going to talk about Markkanen here in a minute. I will say with Mirotić is, you know, as you know, I'm fond of saying, this guy takes the worst shots in the NBA, but then he makes so many of them that you start to be like, maybe it wasn't so bad. I don't know. You know, you start to question how much you know about evaluating things sometimes when you watch him. He certainly hasn't been the player I think the Bulls thought he would be when they were holding on to his draft rights. There was all this kind of talk of this guy was going to come back and be a, you know, world, you know, or not come back, but come over and be a world beater and all this. And then he was pretty good his first year and then kind of struggled from there after. I think his team's really kind of figured out, all right, he can't put it on the deck at all, so you really just got to stay in his face. But he's still a functional guy because he really is a true stretch four, so there is a home for him. So I think it ultimately what probably makes the most sense is he should just sign the qualifying offer. Now, his qualifying offer is at $7.2 million. He's unlikely to get that out, as we just talked, on the market from anybody. So for me is I think it makes sense just sign that qualifying offer, be an unrestricted free agent next summer and see where that takes you. Nothing to say next summer you can't sign a long-term deal with the Bulls if that's the direction they want to go.
Right, and if he has a good year, he can actually up his value even more. So.
Yeah, and there's really, I mean, we're going to talk about it here. There's nothing to keep him from having a good year. You know, yeah. In front of him with the Bulls, there just isn't. You know, with the way their forward position is setting up. So let's get into next year. So what the Bulls are looking at. So let's start with what they got in return in the trade for Jimmy Butler. So the big name is Zach LaVine. He comes over. Then Chris Dunn. So those were the two established NBA players. And then they swapped first-round draft picks. They ended up, the Bulls got the seventh pick in the draft and drafted Lauri Markkanen, the big man from Arizona. He is a stretch four/five, probably more four than five at this point, and can really step out and knock it down from deep. But I want to start with Zach LaVine. Let's start there because he's the big name. He's the potential star in this trade. So LaVine unfortunately missed about a quarter of last season, maybe closer to a half. He went down with a torn ACL. He was kind of the guy who I think, in my opinion, had always been the outside looking in of that young Timberwolves core. It was really they'd built around Karl Anthony Towns, and then Andrew Wiggins seemed to be clearly the second guy. And then it was, is it LaVine? Is it Ricky Rubio? Is it whoever comes in next? And they obviously had the opportunity here to acquire Jimmy Butler, who moves right into the, I would say he's probably slightly behind Towns in the franchise priority pecking order, but only slightly. So LaVine, you know, that's obviously a trade up for the Timberwolves. So what do you think? Let's assume he comes back fully healthy, and all reports are, sounds like he will. I would assume the Bulls will take it somewhat slow with him for reasons we'll discuss a little bit later. Just namely, no shocker here, they're not going to be very good. but it is with LaVine, what do you think he's going to bring to the Bulls?
Scoring, first and foremost. He averaged 19 points before his injury. He only played 47 games in 2016-2017 because of the ACL tear. But, you know, he shot about close to 39% from three. With him, I know his rookie season, Sam Mitchell tried to work, who was then the interim coach for Minnesota, tried to work on getting him acclimated at the point guard spot to help him work on his ball handling, help him create situations. That's what I'd like to see him work on the most in Chicago, just trying to, you know, facilitate for others, kind of take that next step other than just be a scorer. And then, of course, like every other young player, he's only 21. I don't know that he turns, I think he turns, no, he's, he just turned 22, I'm sorry, in March. He has to learn to defend. And luckily for him, the Chicago team is not going to be very good. So it doesn't matter if he defends or not. But I'd like to see him work on that end of the floor. And there's a guy on the team that we'll talk about in just a little bit that I think is going to be able to help him, even though he hasn't played in the league very much, that has good defensive instincts as well. that might be able to help his kind of progression.
Yeah, you know, I'll say with LaVine, too, is the Wolves kind of messed around with him in the beginning, as they should have, because they weren't good, so they were trying to find out what they had in these guys. And they played him at point guard quite a bit, so he does have some good point guard-ish skills. I think we've realized now he's not a point guard, and he never will be, but I think it's always good to have that guy who's a secondary creator, and I think LaVine can be that. You know, he's never going to be your primary create for others guy, I guess is what I'm trying to say. He can create for himself better, but he can create for others a little, which is good. You know, and I think that gives them someone who can really help with alongside the guy who I am now saying I'm going to assume is at least the point guard of the near future, and that's Chris Dunn, who they got in this trade. Dunn came to the Wolves out of Providence last year. I'm familiar with Chris Dunn through the fact that one of my old high school teachers, Ed Cooley, is the head coach at Providence College. So I, you know, really followed Dunn's career quite a bit, and he, you know, was excellent at Providence and then really struggled in his rookie year with Minnesota. Really had a hard time offensively. But he gets after it defensively. He's extremely competitive, really tough kid. I think if he can figure things out, and I think this year is going to be big for him as a second year, where he can really come in and kind of get in there. And what ended up happening with him a lot with Minnesota, he played on second units with not a lot of great talent around him. So I think he ended up forced to be trying to do too much. Now, if you look at the Bulls roster, which I'm looking at their depth chart right in front of me, it's ugly. It's no better than those second units in Minnesota. But I think this Bulls team is clearly in a rebuilding phase. So I think for Dunn, he's going to have that ability to really kind of let the game come to him a little bit more. What are your thoughts on Chris Dunn, and is he the future point guard for the Chicago Bulls?
My thoughts on Chris Dunn, exactly what you said. He's more of a defender right now than he is an offensive type player. But you know this because obviously following Providence, he started out slow at Providence. He didn't really come on, until 2014, 2015. And then just kind of, took off from there. He's always been a good passer. And I think that's where he's going to be able to help this Bulls team get guys involved, things like that. He's never going to be, a 16 to 20 point scorer, I don't think, in the league. But he can give you a solid, 10 to 12 points every night, where his focus would be more on the defensive end of the floor. I'd like to see him kind of knock down, get a little bit more sure when he drives the lane. I noticed, watching Minnesota, he likes to pull up in the mid range for the, little floaters, things like that. I'd like to see him kind of either settle for a three, which I think he can make the 3-point shot, or get all the way to the rim and try to get contact and get fouled there. But I think going forward, he has the most potential out of, and this is bad to say, because as we talk more of the point guards, there's not a whole lot to be excited about, as far as Chicago, but I think he's the best point guard that Chicago has right now. So he kind of has to be, who they're looking at to be the franchise guy, going forward.
Yeah, so let's get into that for a minute, because I think that's an interesting conversation to have here, because we're not necessarily going to talk them at any other point in the show because they're not new additions to the team. But the Bulls still have Jerian Grant, who he was acquired in the Derrick Rose trade at this time last year, and there was some thought of, well, maybe Jerian Grant is the point guard of the future. He'll be coming in behind Rajon Rondo. Maybe he'll be the guy who moves in to that point guard of the future. Before we're even through last year, he's buried on the bench and not really part of things. And now you've got Cameron Payne, who they went out. The Bulls gave up Doug McDermott, Taj Gibson, and a pick to get Cameron Payne. And then proceeded to say Payne came in and he did nothing for the Bulls. Then he played in, I believe it was only one summer league game and didn't look good. And then they pulled him out of there. And now he's there and it's kind of this confusing mix where it's Dunn and Payne and Grant. So you just said same thing. You think Dunn is in there. Are Payne and Grant ever going to be anything beyond even decent backup point guards, or are they not even that?
Grant's, you know, the prototypical third string point guard. I just don't think that he has what it takes to run a team consistently, especially on the first unit. Chicago found that out quickly. And then the second unit's even shaky because he's so inconsistent. One night, you know, he can knock down, you know, 3-4 threes, and the next he's, you know, hitting a stretch of four games where it's 0-for-11 from three. And it's just like, you know, in this day and age, if you can't facilitate or knock down threes as a point guard, there's no real need. And then Cameron Payne, I kind of gave him a pass getting to Chicago because of having the foot injury in Oklahoma City. And I said, okay, I'll give him a chance. You know, he's only 22. He's still young. But just his body language just seems like he just doesn't really care what's happening out there. And I don't get it, because this is his chance to kind of take the reins, show everybody kind of the swagger he had in Oklahoma City, where he thought he should be on the floor more. And now he gets that chance, and he's not shooting well from three. He doesn't take very many, you know, 2-point shots, as half of his attempts were from three. And he doesn't even look to really try to get to the free throw line. And when he does, he's not that great shooting it there either. So I don't know. It's kind of an iffy situation with Cameron Payne, because if you look at him as possibly switching him to shooting guard too, you know, get some minutes there. There's some other good options in Chicago. So I don't know really where he's going to fit.
Yeah, you know, I didn't like that trade at the time, and I don't really like it anymore now. So that's, you know,
if you look at it, couldn't they use McDermott this year?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, McDermott provides outside shooting. He's a small forward. It balances better on the roster. I don't get that whole ordeal. And if Cameron Payne's not careful, Cameron Payne is, you know, potentially out of the league in another year or two.
Well, and as folks who know me know, I fall in love with these certain guys as young prospects. Paging Thomas Robinson, anybody. And Doug McDermott is one of those guys. I just think Doug McDermott's going to be a good NBA player once a team figures out how to use him. I think he can be a stretch four now in the league, and I think that's ultimately where he should land and what he should be. And it's, you know, just one of those things where it's, you know, I hated the trade when it happened. I like it even less now, because, like, as you said, they could use McDermott. You know, Gibson would be gone no matter what, so that part of it is whatever. But then they threw in a pick, which that was just, you know, silly. But let's keep it moving forward here with this team. So Lauri Markkanen, he comes in. As we said, he was drafted. They swapped picks just to close the book on the deal. The Timberwolves used the swap to draft Justin Patton, who is subsequently, he's hurt. I believe it's a broken foot for Justin Patton, if I remember correctly. So we haven't seen him on the floor, and it's more of a project pick for the Wolves. But for the Bulls, Markkanen played in summer league. You know, he did okay. He was not, he looked good at times. At other times, he didn't do much to, you know, inspire confidence in, you know, what he might be. I'm pulling it up now. Averaged 14 points over three summer league games. Shot just 24% from the floor. He took 13.6 shots a game, and 8.3 of them were three-pointers. Shot only 29% overall from the field, but did grab 9 rebounds, blocked 1.6 shots per game, you know, so showed a little bit more there than I think some folks thought. Markkanen's a guy, I didn't have a great handle on him coming into the draft. I was just afraid he wouldn't be able to do enough defensively. But if he can block shots a little bit like that, that starts to really change the equation.
I just don't see him as a shot blocker, because he shied away from contact at Arizona. Didn't really look to get on the block very well. And like you said, most of his attempts come from three-point territory, and he really likes to spot up. And he has the ability to come off screens, but like I said earlier, that's already what Nico Mirotic does. So I just don't get that selection. If I was Chicago, I would have went Dennis Smith or somebody in that range rather than Lauri Markkanen. And the even worse thing, and I had to chuckle to myself, is before the start of the first summer league game that Markkanen played in, his jersey is spelled wrong. So the team doesn't even have confidence in him to spell his name right. I'm just like, oh no.
Yeah, that's tough.
His struggle is going to be strength, just to narrow it down. Strength and then consistency with his confidence, because is it going to weigh on him with the losing? Because Chicago's going to lose. Anybody that's listening to Chicago fans, I'm sorry, but your team's not going to be, very successful. And, you know, where is he going to be if he goes through a stretch of, 2 for 14 shooting? You know, is he going to be able to bounce back quickly and get that back? Because if he's not shooting from three and consistently getting looks, he doesn't really do anything else to keep himself on the floor.
Now, I will say one thing to be really fair is he just turned 20. So, just turned 20 in May. So he'll be 20 for the entirety of this NBA season. So, got to give him a little bit of time there to go. And then the free agent that the Bulls brought in, Justin Holiday, who spent, kind of had a cup of coffee with the Bulls earlier. And he was, again, part of that Derrick Rose trade. And then the Bulls brought him back here. 2 years, $9 million is what they signed him for. Holiday, it's funny because I think we all assume, well, wherever Drew goes, that's where Justin's going. And then that's not how it bared out. And probably for the best for Justin, because I don't think he would have got that kind of money from the Pelicans after Drew re-signed there. But Holiday's he's more of a guard than a forward, but he's, kind of a shooter. I liked him with the Knicks. I thought he did really well with New York this year, as he got more of a featured bench role. And I think that's probably the role he plays with the Bulls going forward this season. He is probably, he's probably going to swing between the two and the three, really, as a true wing. Might be able to play in some lineups alongside Don and Levine to open up the floor a little bit with his shooting. So, it's nothing that you're not going to jump out of your seat all excited about Justin Holiday, but this is a good, solid signing.
Yeah, I agree. And he really got his chance to really shine when it was in summer league a couple years ago when Steve Kerr was kind of coaching. He kind of took over that team and was kind of the one that led them, and scoring a couple games and things like that, and got the opportunity. And he did well, like you said, in New York last year, really got the opportunity to get minutes, 20 minutes a game, 35% shooting from three. But it was New York. So I think his numbers go up a little bit slightly, as far as shooting the ball. But I also think he looks to create his offense more, getting to the rim, things like that, that he didn't show as much in New York. I think he does that in Chicago this year. And I actually think that he plays quite a bit at the three more than he does it at the two. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think if they're missing anything on this roster right now, it's a true three-man. That's just something the Bulls don't really have other than maybe Denzel Valentine. And, other than that, there's definitely minutes open there. So let's move on to a player that they re-signed, Cristiano Felicio. The Bulls re-signed him for 4 years, $32 million. It was one of the very early on agreed to contracts. He was a restricted free agent. My thought was the Bulls maybe jumped the gun a little bit. It's not a bad contract, so I don't want to make it out like this was a mistake, because Felicio, let me pull it up here. He is 25 years old, just turned 25 in July, so he should be fine for the duration of that contract. But where I was getting at that they jumped the gun a little was they didn't need to sign him right away. I think they were afraid some other team might come in with a restricted free agent offer, whether it be a team like the Nets or the 76ers or somebody, and throw more money than they were then comfortable matching at Felicio. So I think they jumped and said, hey, let's get this guy signed. But $8 million for a guy who's a quality backup. He can play a little bit of the four, but he's much more of a five. I think that's perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, he can defend a little bit. He rebounds. That's more of his forte. He hasn't played a ton of minutes, but he doesn't really need to. But I think now, depending on what, Chicago does as the season progresses with a guy like Robin Lopez you know, if they decide because he's a vet, maybe they move him or something towards the deadline, he might get a real opportunity to get substantial minutes and could really kind of have a breakout second half of the season. And why not? I mean, reward the guy for the last couple of years in Chicago. I know that Atlanta was someone that was rumored early on to possibly be going after him, but I mean, based on the big man market that was out there, they could have done a lot worse, a la Charlotte Hornets. But, you know, I think with Cristiano, I think that he gets a really good chance to show what he can do this season, and it's going to surprise a lot of fans that have not normally watched Chicago.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a good chance, we're not going to spend a lot of time on him because he's not new to the team, but I think there's a good chance Robin Lopez doesn't finish the season with the Bulls because he's really, quite frankly, too good to be on a rebuilding team. So I think it doesn't make sense for them. So I think that could be one of those positions where it could really open up a lot of time, potentially even the starting spot for Felicio. And it wouldn't surprise me if he, you know, with somewhere in the 25 to 28, maybe even 30 minute per game, if all of a sudden you've got a guy who's averaging close to double figures in rebounds and, you know, doing some things like that, it would not shock me at any rate. You know, and good on the Bulls, because the Bulls, this is a guy who, he went undrafted in 2014. He was not anybody by any means who really tore it up in the overseas leagues. You know, he was good, but he wasn't amazing. He had played, you know, primarily in Brazil, and the Bulls really kind of, I'm going to call it what it is, they really kind of found him and said, you know, hey, we'll bring this guy in and give him a shot. And then he, you know, has earned that, you know, $8 million a year contract from the Bulls. So to close it out, a couple more minor additions. David Nwaba, who was waived by the LA Lakers as they were clearing cap space to do their offseason maneuvers. The Bulls waiver claimed him. I like it. These are the things you should do when you can, and you've got roster spots and cap space. Why not? It's not going to cost you anything. At worst, you know, you eat a little bit of money for bringing a guy like that to camp. We don't need to spend a lot of time on it. And then they are one of the few teams that has filled both of their two-way deals. They signed Ryan Arcidiacono, who, if you remember back to Villanova's runs in the NCAA tournament, he was a big part of that. And then Antonio Blakeney, another guy who they signed. Blakeney, he's one of the few guys who signed a two-year two-way contract, which is not something we've seen a lot of. He did that there. So those two guys are now slated to be the two-way contracts. As a reminder, just the educational component of the show, the two-way contract guys, so Arcidiacono and Blakeney for the Bulls, they can spend up to 40 days on the NBA roster, or 45 days, excuse me. 40 or 45? 45. See, I'm a little out of touch, man. I took a week off, and now I'm forgetting stuff. I'm
getting That's old. What happens. That's all
right. I know, right? So 45 days on the NBA roster, but that only counts during the G League season. So they'll be with the Bulls all the way through camp. They'll be on the roster for the early part of the year. They might even get in a game or two here and there. But then once the G League season starts, that 45-day clock kicks in, and that's not just games, that's days with the NBA team, so practices, days off, all that, it all counts. Then once the G League season ends, that clock ends, and the two-way guys can come back up to the team. They are not eligible for the playoffs unless they are converted and signed into a full regular NBA contract. There's all timing on the last dates that those kind of things can happen as we get into the season. So it's the new thing in the NBA is these new two-way contracts. We'll see, you know, how they work out, and we'll see if teams stick with the guys they sign there, if they cycle different guys through those. It's going to be really interesting to see how that works out as we get into it. But now we're going to get into our question portions with the Chicago Bulls. So news has broken recently. Nick Friedell of ESPN Chicago broke that the Bulls and Dwayne Wade are expected to complete a buyout soon, I guess is the best way to put it, or in the coming weeks. Doesn't sound like either side is in any kind of rush to do this, but also does not sound like either side is committed to this being a long-term marriage that lasts anywhere deep into the season. So, Pete, the question I'm going to ask you on Wade is, because I think we're both going to be in agreement that this makes sense for both sides. So the question I want to ask is, where does Dwayne Wade go from here?
Well, I think obviously he's got emotional ties to Miami, first and foremost, but his buddy LeBron is in Cleveland. Those two basically are the only two that I've seen rumored for him. If I had to kind of do a, kind of toss up, I think he kind of really wants to close it out, not knowing how many years he has left. I think he wants to close it out in Miami. So I think that's where he would go, would be the Miami Heat.
Yeah, that one wouldn't overly surprise me. The thing where I would start to wonder is if you're the Heat, obviously you'd redo that, and bring him back and run it back in effect. But they've got Dion Waiters, who they just committed big money to, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, Wayne Ellington, Rodney McGruder. Those guys at this point, to me, they're all better options, at that shooting guard spot. So I'd hate to see them bring Wade in and then feel like they have to play him. So for me, I think it's more likely he goes somewhere where he can play and be on a contender. And that's why I think, Cleveland, if LeBron's still around, and we're going to get into the Cavs as our next team on this same episode, I think that would make sense. I could even see him potentially going to Houston. I think that would make some
Interesting.
sense. There is just catching on as a minimum signee, with the Rockets and stepping in and playing, some backup minutes. Because I think he's willing to be a backup at this point in his career, but it's going to have to be on a really good team. If it's not a really good team, he's not going to be a backup. That's just not going to happen. So I'll be curious. And then, of course, you'll have any number of teams. Could he follow Jimmy Butler to Minnesota? They have need for guys who can score the ball off the bench.
And the Nuggets made a run at him too
The
last
Nuggets
year.
did, yeah. Now, if I was the Nuggets, sit with Gary Harris and Jamal Murray, you're just fine.
I would too,
There's no reason to mess around with Dwayne Wade, but or what about a team like New Orleans and reconnect with Rajon Rondo? There's definitely teams that could still use him where I think he could help. So it'll be curious to see where that one goes. So then my next question is, and I think we touched on this a little bit, so I'm just going to confirm. Dunn starts over Payne, right? We're both in agreement on that one.
Correct.
Yep.
Yep.
And then it's shooting guard. So let's assume Dwayne Wade is on the Bulls to start the year, and Zach LaVine is back and healthy. Who starts?
I think Wade starts with LaVine, kind of still rehabbing,
Yep.
in a sense, even though he's healthy, he's still gonna, kind of ease into minutes. Now, once, just say hypothetically, Wade is bought out and LaVine is not quite ready. Start the season, then that's where we kind of get dicey because
Yeah.
you've got, Valentine, you've got Holiday, both there, as options. And I think Valentine may end up getting the nuds there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, what they do if that is the situation. For the record, I'm in agreement with you. I think Wade starts and they bring LaVine on slowly, with the idea of Wade's not there to end the year, and then LaVine slides in and becomes the starting shooting guard going forward for the Bulls. So where are the Bulls left now? Like I said, they're still functioning as an over the cap team. That is mostly due to the big cap hold for Nikola Mirotic, as I mentioned before, almost $11 million. Plus, they have a $15.3 million trade exception, which counts against the salary cap if you're functioning as an over the cap team, as it does for the Bulls. That's really what takes them over the cap. If they wanted to, they could go as much as $25 million under. That's if they Mirotic went elsewhere, they let Morrow go, and then they lost those trade exception for Butler, and then they have a smaller one of about $1.6 million for Taj Gibson. Then they would lose those, and then they would have the ability to be an under the cap team and do, whatever else it is they want to do in terms of free agency. But, that's not where we're at right now. It seems like they're content. I do think they're going to get something worked out with Mirotic. That seems to be the big order of business still left for them. He seems to be the big one. If not him, they really need some other big on the roster. They're covered at center with Lopez and Felicio, but the power forwards right now, Bobby Portis and Markkanen, I think you'd want some form of veteran in that mix if you could get it. It's just there's no one.
Thomas Robinson.
Thomas. Well, yeah, but that's the answer to any team that needs a big. we love Thomas Robinson. We're going to do a whole episode sometime where we just break down why Thomas Robinson's not
an
all-star. And then they've got $3.7 million left of the non-taxpayer mid-level exception. They still have the biannual exception now. They would lose the biannual if for some reason they go under the cap. But that's going to close us out with the Bulls. Minus one question left, and we talked before the show, so I know we're in agreement. But I'm going to go first on this one, and then I'll let you go first on the Cavs. We do stock up or stock down? Stock down for the Bulls for me. Stock down all the way to the point they finish with the worst record in the NBA.
Wow. I might have to get behind that one because I kind of had a toss-up between Chicago and Brooklyn for the worst record in the East. I'm going to go with you. They have the worst record in the East. And I don't want to get in a whole tangent, but please, hopefully, somehow, some way, Gar Foreman and John Paxson are not there in the next year or two, and the franchise can get back on track because it's just been a mess.
Yeah, Pete knows me. I will never advocate for people to lose a job, but it's time to go in a different direction there. I mean, the fans are hanging billboards now that they, what was it? We don't see red anymore. You know, we want to see these guys go. So, so that's the tough spot there. So we're going to pause now before we move on to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Just to remind you, this is the NBA Front Office Show. I am your host, Keith Smith. We are part of the Almighty Baller Network, both podcast and radio side here. You can find the episode wherever you're listening to it right now. But if you're looking for other ways, you can find us on Stitcher and TuneIn and all those great places, in addition to iTunes. I'm going to ask now, and I will ask again at the end of the show, if you enjoy the show, please head over to wherever your favorite place is and give us a 5-star rating and review. It really does help the show it grow. It'll help put a little bit of money in Pete and I's pocket eventually so that we can continue to keep doing this and bringing all this great content to you. If you enjoy the show, do us a solid and help. I promise you we will never inundate you with ads. And once we get there, we won't ask more than once or twice a show for you to do that for us. So that would be a big, huge help to us there. So once again, this is the NBA Front Office Show, part of the Almighty Baller Network. And now we're going to move into the Cleveland Cavaliers, the defending Eastern Conference champion Cavaliers. They fell in the NBA Finals to the juggernaut, unstoppable Golden State Warriors. And so what we're going to do, we're going to get right into it. The guys who are out in Cleveland, none of them really matter. It's Dante Jones, James Jones, Deron Williams, and Derek Williams. Now, Dante Jones, that's just whatever. I don't even know why they did that again at the end of this past season, brought him back. I think it's just to be an agitator when they play Golden State. James Jones, he's actually the Suns' new assistant general manager, so something tells me he's not coming back there. And then Deron Williams, he did okay for them after catching on as a buyout player.
Awful in the playoffs.
He was awful in the playoffs. That is definitely true, which is probably why he's not back. And then Derek Williams, who, Derek Williams, he's another one of those guys I like. I feel like Derek Williams can play, and he had a good, solid run with the Knicks for a while. Then he signed with the Heat. Got kind of caught in the shuffle in Miami. Miami did him a solid and waived him. He caught on with the Cavs. Gave the Cavs decent minutes here and there, but he still hasn't caught on with another team, and that tells you. Go ahead.
Rumor is they may want to bring him back now.
Yeah, and I've seen that recently. I don't know where the roster room is for them to do that. As we get into the guys they kind of re-signed and then brought back, so that becomes the challenge there. But Williams could do worse, I guess, than re-upping with the Cavs. So so let's get into the guys who came in, and this is, again, it's a short list. You didn't lose a lot of guys, so it's a short list, but we're bearing the lead here a little bit. There's other things to talk about with Cleveland that we'll get into in a minute here. But first thing they did, they re-signed Kyle Korver, 3 years, $22 million. That last year is only partially guaranteed. It is partially guaranteed for a little over $3.4 million out of $7.5 million total. So really not an overly big thing. Now, Korver keeps himself in incredible shape. He continues to be the single best three-point shooter in the NBA. And I will tell you, I don't think it's particularly close still. That's not to say there's not other good shooters, but Korver's ridiculous. I think people sleep on it. So, well, I'm gonna pull up his numbers, Pete, real quick. But you go ahead and talk about what re-signing Korver does for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Well, it gives you outside shooting. Then it gives you a veteran, not only that has great character for your locker room, but is able to help some of the young guys like Chetty Osman. That's we'll talk about in just a little bit. Really kind of helps him develop. And I think with Korver, a lot of people were saying, well, that's a lot of money to throw at Korver. But, I mean, what he's done in Atlanta, Utah, I know he played for Philly, and then, of course, for Cleveland. I mean, great career. Chicago,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, those couple years with the Bulls,
MVP year for Rose, 2010, 2011. I can't believe I forgot that. But what he does on the floor, just the ability to space it, and you cannot leave him at all, is huge for what LeBron James does. If Kyrie Irving is, in fact, there, it helps him as well. So, just good guy all the way around. So nothing I can say negative about Korver.
Yeah, and so I just looked him up. And if you're listening to this show, we're not breaking any news here. But shout out to Basketball Reference. What a tool. These guys, this so much information there. If you're trying to do anything with the NBA, obviously you've got that site bookmarked and you're probably in it every day, as I know I am. But Korver, so here's where it is. People are like, oh, he's slowing down, he's not as good. Led the league in three-point shooting again last year. This is why I wanted to look it up. 45.1%. And this is after a down year at 39.8% with Atlanta in his last full year down there. So his last couple.
And he was hurt, too.
Yeah. So these were his first three full years in Atlanta. 45.7. 47.2 led the league. 49.2 led the league. Then dipped, all the way to the horrible 39.8, which is still probably most teams.
Yeah, to be injured and shoot like that, come on.
And he gutted through 80 games that year, hurt. And then 45.1, including 48.5% with Cleveland. So, for all those people, yes, he is 35 years old, I think, might have just turned. Yeah, he's 36 now, so he turned 36 in March. I know a lot of people are, he's old, he's slowing down. He keeps himself in phenomenal shape. He is one of those. He was one of those early guys who was all about his workouts, and all the things he does as a kind of a workout warrior. So phenomenal shape, incredible shooter. I wouldn't worry about him at all. I think this contract will be fine all the way to the end. And, all these people then, and then once you kind of convince them there, well, he stinks on defense. It's not as bad as people think. He's not a good defender by no means, but he's fine in the team system. He can do enough, in there. And and to go back to those three-point attempts, these are on, big attempt numbers. These are, nearly six attempts per game. So you're not talking, you guys only taking two or three. So, I'm perfectly fine with that deal. Where it may not make sense is if the Cavs turn into a rebuilding team. But at that point, you flip them off for some sort of asset to another team and figure it out from there. So now let's get into the guys that they brought in. So let's start with the big name, Derrick Rose. He was one of their later signings, or actually he's their latest signing. 1 year minimum contract, came in to presumably be the backup point guard, but maybe the starter if a Kyrie Irving trade goes down, which I promise we will talk about before the show ends. But Derrick Rose comes in, 1 year minimum deal. So let's work under the assumption we have now that Irving is on the team. What does Rose bring the Cavs as the backup point guard?
Scoring, because he does not facilitate, that's for sure. He did actually, he looked like he was going to make it through the season kind of unscathed last year. And I was like, okay, he's looking good. And then, another injury hit. With Rose, obviously lost the athleticism with, major injuries to his knees. But I think he still has the effective ability to kind of get in the lane. I just wish he would utilize that to facilitate more. And the trouble I have with him is that he's not a very good three-point shooter. So now losing that little bit of athleticism, teams are going to be able to kind of clamp down more on him. So he's decided to take that little mid-range shot that's kind of like a little bank floater. I don't know what you really would call it. And sometimes it's effective, sometimes it's not. So why not do the perfect thing and you know, drive in, make people play on you, pass it out to a guy like a Kyle Korver on the wing. You know, boom, you got a three points on the board right there. That would be a perfect scenario. The question's going to be, is his mindset going to be, I'm not MVP Derrick Rose anymore. I'm okay being a backup, doing what I need to do to make this second team run effectively.
Yeah, so let's break down Rose a little bit here. He's going to turn 29 right before the start of the season. He's 29 with a 49-year-old's knees. but he, last season with the Knicks, so this is, I think, some things, I think, kind of adding on to what you were saying. These are things I don't think people realize. He played in the second most games since his All-Star years in his MVP season, which was 64. And some of that was the Knicks shut him down early. And then he averaged 18 points per game. That's his most since his last All-Star season. He shot 47.1% from the field, which is the most since his second year in the league. He has essentially stopped taking three-pointers altogether. He takes less than one a game. This is the challenge, though, right? You said it. Now he only 4.4 assists per game. Now, the Knicks were, quite frankly, a mess. But it's not like he wasn't working with guys he could have found on drives to the basket. Mm-hmm. You know, you got Melo, you got Kristaps Porzingis. They had other quality guys out there. Courtney Lee on the wing as a shooter. Justin Holiday, who we mentioned in the Bulls portion of the show. He could have found more guys. I think on a second unit, what he becomes is he almost is like a Jamal Crawford, but not as a shooter, but as a driver. So I think he becomes a guy who he could carry the second unit for the Cavs and really give them, you know, 15, 20 minutes a night where they could sit LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love and, you know, a whole bunch of guys and just say, hey, go nuts. Because he proved he can still get by starting point guards. And now what he does is he's obviously lost some of his quickness and athleticism, but what he does now is he uses his strength to get inside and power over guys because he's still pretty strong and he's still a pretty big guy. He's 6'3", I think, which a lot of people forget about Derrick Rose. He's not tiny out there. So, you know, it's one of those ones. I'm not going to go crazy and I'm not super excited about it, but I think it's perfectly fine. And there's an old saying in the NBA, you can never go wrong with the minimum unless you play the guy too much. And I think Rose is going to be just fine. Now, the other point guard they signed, that I don't know. Jose Calderon comes in, 1-year contract, minimum deal. If Calderon's their third point guard and he plays on the nights as the backup when Rose needs a night off or Rose slides up to start and Kyrie gets a night off, that's probably fine. You know, Calderon, he doesn't never hurt you on offense. This guy never turns the ball over. Can still shoot it a little bit. He can't defend, never could. But yo, it's just one of those. That's just one of those kind of. It's a veteran.
Well, he's not going to be able to play consistent minutes if Rose goes down with another injury.
Yeah, that's Kyrie, the challenge. Yeah,
Kyrie's not there, and then you've got basically a toss up between Jose Calderon and Kay Felder. So that's not going to be good for.
Yeah, if Kyrie's the not there, that might be the worst point guard group in the league. You know, I think it's, you know, off the top of my head, I'm struggling to come up with a worse one. And then the other veteran signing that they brought in, Jeff Green, another minimum contract guy. He, you know, comes in. He's going to be really slide in there. I think he
finally a team didn't overpay him.
I know, right? Yeah. Jeff Green is he's got more than enough to live off of. He's made money the last couple of rounds that he probably should not have. But you know, he's a guy who can come in and can play behind LeBron James and Kevin Love. Perfectly fine at both forward spots without an issue. Can still defend a little bit, can do some things. If you are a Cavaliers fan and you're going to watch Jeff Green regularly for the first time, there's going to be a night when you're going to be like, this guy is awesome. We need to play him more. We could even trade Kevin Love and start him. And then for the next four nights, you're gonna be like, oh yeah, Jeff Green's on the team. I forgot about that.
And you'll have vodka ready right next to you.
Yeah, he just,
Every time he chucks up a bad shot or tries to drive and it goes nowhere.
Yeah, he is just one of those guys where it's like, what in the world is, why are you so wildly inconsistent?
And I was so high on him when he got drafted. Like when he was going to Seattle and Oklahoma City, I was like, okay, he's going to be good, good power forward, can really do some things offensively. And then it just kind of drifted downward from there, sadly.
You know what I think? He's going to help them more in the regular season, I think, than the playoffs. Because what he'll be able to do is he'll be able to, again, play behind LeBron, but more importantly, play behind Kevin Love. Because that's what they don't have on the roster right now, is they don't have anybody who can play credible minutes at the four behind Love, and that's where I think Green slides in, because Fry can't do it because he can't defend the position. Thompson is a five, so that's where you don't want to be using LeBron James at the four in the regular season. It's just not, right. It's just not a smart use of, one of, if not the single best asset in all of basketball. So I think that's where he's going to help them quite a bit. But it wouldn't surprise me if by the time we get the playoffs, if he's, almost out of the rotation and has disappeared from that point. So then the other addition to the Cavaliers, this one's been, we've been waiting on this one for a little bit. Chetty Osman is finally coming over to the Cleveland Cavaliers. They signed him 3 years, $8.3 million. What they did was they used part of the taxpayer mid-level exception to pay Osman. They gave him three fully guaranteed seasons, $2.6 million, $2.8 million, $2.9 million is what he's going to get to come to Cleveland. He's an interesting kind of guy. He is a he's probably more of a guard than a forward, but more of a true wing at this size. He's about 6'8" kid. Mm-hmm. He, pretty tough-minded kid. I know you've watched him a little bit, so fill people in on what they can expect out of Chetty Osman.
Well, he played in the EuroLeague for Anadolu Efes the past couple seasons. He can kind of do a mixture of things. He can shoot from three. He can slash in transition. He doesn't rebound very much. Like, he's not really an athletic guy that's going to go after rebounds, kind of hustle in the defensive end. He's going to be raw. So if you're Cleveland, I would not expect him. Number one, I would not expect him to be in the rotation year one. Number two, when he does get in, he's going to make mistakes defensively, as most rookies do. But I would look for him to, kind of shoot the ball from three more so than anything. And as he kind of develops to the NBA speed, then you'll see him kind of do some things more, off the dribble, getting to the rim, things like that. But very raw. But I'm glad they brought him over, because I was kind of curious to see how long it was going to take for him to get over to America.
Yeah, it's always these guys who get kind of drafted and we build them up forever. And unfortunately, the track record isn't always great. So I hope he can break that and be a really good player. Beyond that, the Cavs they're going to look remarkably the same as of, let's see, it's about 9 o'clock at night on Thursday, August 17th. We are waiting just like everybody else. And I can tell you the NBA world is waiting to see what happens. Are they going to trade Kyrie Irving? So we don't want to be the last ones to break down should they or shouldn't they. Because I know from my standpoint is, no, you shouldn't trade Kyrie Irving. You've been in the NBA Finals 3 years in a row. You won one. You were right in the mix on another one. Last year didn't go exactly how expected, but you should be there again if you just run things back. And Kyrie's young. He's great. He's a superstar NBA player. But it seems like he doesn't want to be there. And he wants to get out of town. So we're going to break that down. So I'm going to flip it to you, Pete, is will Kyrie Irving be a Cleveland Cavalier at the start of the season?
I don't think he will be. I think at this point, Cleveland is just kind of visiting all options that are coming in. They want to make the best move possible because they're looking at two sides of the coin. One, all right, if we don't think that LeBron James is going to re-sign with us in the 2018 offseason, then we need to make sure that we get enough back that can kind of really make a spark for the team going forward. If we are going to get him back, then we need to be a more veteran-laden team, not these young guys that we're kind of looking for. So there's two different sides to it, but I think at the end of the day, I don't know that it's a smart decision on Kyrie's, kind of thought process, because if LeBron is gone next season, then you have a team to yourself anyway, and you've already won there. You've won a championship. I don't know, going to, just throwing a team out there, going to Phoenix. You know, you're not building that team to a championship contender in the next year or two, unless somehow, you know, groups of guys, you know, start texting each other and everything kind of bands together. But overall, I mean, if I was Cleveland, I would just say, too bad, so sad, you're going to have to play it out. There's 2 years left on your contract. Hate it for you.
Yeah, I just don't think they can. I think that's the challenges. I don't think you can. It sounds like that situation is bad. And,
you know,
it's funny because I know I was listening to Bill Simmons and Kevin O'Connor. One of the things he threw out there is, why don't you just trade LeBron if he's going to leave now? And I was like, oh, man, like that, like it seems like, holy crap, you can't do that. But then in some retrospect, it's like, you know, if people don't know, I root for the Patriots out in my football fandom. One of the things Bill Belichick does is there's no emotion in these decisions. You just, you know, you cut, trade, move on from guys if it's what's best for the team. And it's like, maybe that is what you're going to do. You're just going to say, all right, let's move on. You know, let's if LeBron's not committing to staying, maybe we got to go. Now that clearly kicks off the rebuild, but that's where you're likely headed anyway. But back to Kyrie, it just feels like this decision is just, it's ugly. It's no, you know, it's just, it's going to be bad. I don't think you can bring him back and just roll it out there and be like, hey, everything's fine. You know, we'll figure this out. You know, I don't know. It's people, a lot of people are suggesting, well, maybe they wait to the middle of December when guys, the NBA rules.
That would be terrible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But to explain why people are suggesting that is NBA rules are, if you sign a guy over the summer before or on or before September 15th, you have to wait till December 15th to be able to trade him. That's essentially so you can't sign a guy over the summer and be like, oh, you know what, we don't want him. Let's, you know, get somebody else. You're not allowed to do that. So one of the things we see happen then is these teams, they hang on to these guys. And that's, it's funny because this is one of the things that people are always like, it opens up the trade. You know, that's when the trade windows really open up. Rarely do we see a team sign a guy over the summer and less than 6 months later they trade him. It doesn't usually happen that way. So I don't buy into that. And also, you can't do that anyway. That's 2 months into the year. You're going to have 2 months of just guys who don't want to be together. So it's curious, you know, well, training camps will open up in a little over than a month from now, hard as that is to believe. So I don't think he's there to start the year. So to go on to the Cavs, they obviously have no cap space left. They are one of the highest tax paying teams in the NBA. They've got about $2.5 million of their taxpayer exception left. They still need, in my mind, another quality big man. They are still really shy in that department. I just spent time talking about Jeff Green as the backup four man, and nobody wants that. So, you know, they've got to figure something. Oops, sorry, hit my mic there. Got to figure out something to get another quality big in for the Cleveland Cavaliers. So now we're going to kick it to stock up, stock down. And I'm going to go to you first, Pete. Stock up, stock down on the Cavs.
Stock down, man, because these rumors of LeBron not resigning, Kyrie wanting out, they didn't really do anything in the offseason. They whiffed on the Paul George trade. Man, they didn't get Jimmy Butler. It's like, what? How could you say stock up? And I know they went to the finals the last, 3 years in a row, but this may be the year that they don't make it.
Yeah, you know, the Celtics are certainly improved and better. They're going to be there. I think the Wizards are going to be a good team. The Bucks are on their way up. The Raptors are still around. Then you've got a handful of other teams starting to move up the ladder in the NBA's East. It's not the West where everybody's good, but it is a, you know, yeah, I'm in agreement with you, stock down. It's going to be stock way down if they move either Kyrie or LeBron. It just, you know, obviously there's no way they come out of either one of those trades better for this season. It's just impossible. You can't move guys that are that talented and somehow be better. So I would be really surprised if they're better. But, you know, on that note, they've been in the finals 3 years in a row and they won a championship. So I don't know that you can really be too upset if you're a Cavs fan, even if this is it, that it all kind of comes crumbling down here, or even just a Cleveland sports fan. They are, the most successful team you've had in town in years, and actually got it done and brought you a championship. So, I don't know that you can go too crazy if it all kind of falls apart here. I know you don't want to see LeBron leave again, but if that's going to happen, he came home, he delivered on his mission, he got a title for Cleveland,
and you got to get something for him this time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the other thing. You can't just let him walk. That's the other thing that's tricky here is, now it's so tough, right? Because it's just the whole thought of, do you trade LeBron James? How could you do it? But, I'm not sure that's what Kobe Altman wants to be, on his legacy, that he's the guy who sent LeBron out of town. But I'm with you. If he's clear to you, like, I'm out, I'm leaving, I'm going west, all indications are he wants to be in Los Angeles, then you do have to do something, because you can't do that. You can't just watch him walk away again for nothing. And it would be doubly as hurtful if you traded Kyrie Irving earlier to do that, which is, it sounds like what's holding up the Irving trade is that they're insisting on young pieces, and that's what they should do. Because if you want to bounce back, you need to have an Andrew Wiggins or Jason Tatum. Those are a couple names that have been linked that the Cavs have interest in. You got to have a guy like that to rebuild around if that's what you're going to do. So with that, we're going to close it out here. We talked the Chicago Bulls and the Cleveland Cavaliers as we get back into our off-season reviews. A little bit different. We'll talk our kind of season predictions and those things as we get closer to the season a couple months from now. 2 months from today, believe it or not, is opening night in the NBA, which is just it's
wow.
It's both too far away and far too close.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's a little nerve-wracking to think about it being virtually upon us here. But one of the things that we're going to continue here is we're going to continue, now that Pete and I are both I think our calendars and lives are getting back to normal a little bit more, we're going to get back into a regular recording schedule, and we're going to knock out the remainder of these teams. The next up, we're going to talk the Dallas Mavericks and the Denver Nuggets. So we're finally heading west, Pete. We're getting into the Western Conference.
Yeah.
If you don't know, we go alphabetical by city, and the first handful are all Eastern Conference teams. But I'm excited to get into the West. I'm really excited to talk about the Nuggets, because they're, I think have potential to be a really fun team. But, we won't get into that now. We'll get into that on the next episode. Once again, this has been the NBA Front Office Show. I'm your host, Keith Smith. I've been joined by Pete Toll. Pete, tell everybody where they can find you on Twitter and social media.
Mainly all I use is Twitter, so you can find me at Pete Toll NBA. So it's PETETOALNBA.
Absolutely. And you can find me on Twitter at Keith Smith NBA. But mostly at this point now, I'm tweeting out camp signings and the likes of those, as a lot of those are happening, and a lot of international signings as NBA and NBA fringe players head overseas for that bigger money. That's where the focus is now, as teams are kind of filling it out. I know, talking with a lot of folks with NBA teams, they are not, they love what the season starting earlier brings in terms of more days off and no 4 games in 5 nights and less back-to-backs. They don't like that it shortened down their summer a little bit. That's not anyone seems to be a fan of. And no one is happy that this Kyrie Irving drama is still floating out here as we head into late August and we don't have all the rosters settled. Normally, teams are more or less on vacation at this point for about a month or so until everybody regroups in the middle of September-ish and gets back in the gym. But we will endeavor, if a Kyrie Irving trade breaks, we will come back probably with a special show just to break that one down. Or we will, if it happens on the day we happen to be recording, we'll lead off that show with the Kyrie Irving trade if it does ultimately end up happening. But once again, this is the NBA Front Office Show. If you've enjoyed the show, please head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and review. We would really appreciate it. We are part of the Almighty Baller Network, and we will talk to you next time.